This is How Sound from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Hi, this is Rob Rosenthal. I'm your host for How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. On this edition of How Sound, I'm going to feature a piece that kind of threw me for a loop. It's about an auction where the items being auctioned off were left at banks in safety deposit boxes for years and years. Now, after listening to the story, I thought this could have been produced so much more simply. Go to the auction, record the sound of the auctioneer, interview buyers, interview people running the auction, grab some tape from someone who works at the bank, and then boom, you're done. And then you'd probably have a really boring story on your hands. But the story I heard was so much more than that. I wondered, how did the reporter figure out how to make the story so interesting, and how did he even see the story in the first place? So I called him up.
I'm your puppet for the next however long you need me.
That's the best interviewee opening line I've ever had.
I try to please.
Yeah. Why don't we start by having you introduce yourself?
My name is Kenny Malone. I am a reporter and a producer at WLRN, Miami Herald News, a collaborative news partnership here in Miami.
Kenny produced the auction story back in 2009. The unclaimed property auction is run by the state of Florida. After rent for a safety deposit box goes unpaid for many years, banks bring the contents of the boxes to the state. Then the state tries to find the owner. If, after some time, no one claims the property, it goes to an auction run by Florida's chief financial officer. And how did you first hear about all of this?
I'm ashamed to say this is from a press release. A press release from the Florida State CFO's office announcing their annual unclaimed property auction.
Why are you ashamed of that?
Because I feel like a puppet to the CFO's office by going along with the press release. But the fact of the matter is it's true. 300 press releases are really bad, and then there's one or two that you just see something. And so yeah, I mean this is a press release story. That's where it started. And then it became about what interests you about this? What is fascinating and what is contradictory? What questions are there for the reportage to sort out? And then how do you tell that story?
For Kenny, that question for the reportage to sort out is key. Not only should you have one, it should prompt a kind of mystery, something that needs to be explained and unraveled. Think about the simple version of the story I laid out earlier. Show up and interview a bunch of people related to the auction. What's the central question for that? Something mundane like, what's this auction all about? Whoop-de-doo, right? Well, Kenny's question was much more clever.
What initially is interesting to me about just the premise of this kind of an auction is the sort of inherent paradox of something being important enough to put in a safety deposit box, and yet it's gone unclaimed for a number of years, for sometimes 5, 10, 15 years. There's a basic question there that warrants answering. How does stuff become so important that you lock it away, but then isn't important enough to remember to pay for it or to not have someone there to pick it up when you die or whatever happens?
With his central question in mind, Kenny contacted the CFO's office and asked for an example of what they were auctioning. They sent him a list from one box that included vintage opera glasses, a jade-like bracelet, and a 13-carat diamond. Well, Kenny thought, that's perfect. The 13-carat diamond alone fits perfectly into the central question he was posing. But because having a backup plan is always a good idea, he asked the state for a list of contents from another box. That led him to Udavilla Rutherford and a second question.
And then they sent me Udavilla Rutherford. And Udavilla Rutherford's list of unclaimed property was not even close to as expensive, but was very strange. So it starts off with some Kennedy half dollars. Okay, fine. That's sort of a normal thing to stick in a safety deposit box. An open-faced Waltham pocket watch. All right, that makes sense. And then it gets into like three salt and pepper shaker sets. One is green and orange, one is acorn-shaped, and one is barrel-shaped. You keep reading, and there's some more salt and pepper shakers. There's a set that's shaped like a cow. And as I was thinking about telling this story of things that are valuable enough to lock away but not to go reclaim, it made a thousand times more sense to go with things that have no inherent value but are being locked away. Why is this thing valuable enough to lock away? And so that was the starting place. We found a very interesting box of things that were being auctioned off and then just wanted to figure out everything we could about it.
Here's Kenny's story. It's called The Tale of Lot 180.
These are certificates and lots being sold for collectible value only. Here we go, lot number 179. Hook it in for 100. How about to give 100? 100.
Yudavilla Rutherford spent her final years in Bradenton on the Gulf Coast of Florida. She was 91 years old when she died. In addition to two children and two grandchildren, she left behind a safety deposit box. Yudavilla's box was peculiar. Instead of stock certificates and jewelry, it contained salt and pepper shakers, loads of them, shaped like lanterns, and acorns, cows. Recently, Yudavilla Rutherford's name was stripped from her keepsakes. They were tossed into a bin with 10 sets of old pens and several broken figurines. They were labeled Lot 180.
Let's get on the next one. Lot number 180. Who'd he go 650? How about he get 50? Would he get another 6?
Florida's Bureau of Unclaimed Property auctions off items from abandoned safety deposit boxes. Year after year, tens of thousands of boxes, many of them orphaned like Yudavilla's. This is the legacy left behind by many elderly Floridians, unclaimed stuff. When Yudavilla died, no one was there to pay for her safety deposit box. After 2 years, the Bank of America in Bradenton sent her belongings to Tallahassee. The Bureau spent two more years waiting to hear from next of kin. They sent letters to Yudavilla's home and to addresses of relatives. No one responded. So her priceless memorabilia was given a price, $650.
$75. Close it right here for $650. For $650. Thank you, ma'am. Let's get on the next one. Here we go. All right.
Like that, Yudavilla Rutherford was gone. But I couldn't stop wondering, who was she? I asked that question to Tom Egler. He's the vault supervisor for the Bureau of Unclaimed Property.
She has a story to tell here.
His coworkers say Egler has a gift for dumping out a safety deposit box and piecing together a life.
Here's some salt and pepper shakers are made out of pine bark and old wooden barrels. It appears to me that she was on vacation up north and she picked up souvenirs. She may have lived up north, and I presume that she did live up north because there's a picture of her and probably her husband in the wintertime up north. She looks like a working woman, and he looked like a blue-collar worker.
What do you think those last years were like?
I think they were quiet, and I think they were relaxing. I'm sure she was retired, and she had a great life, and I think she was in South Florida enjoying the sun, enjoying the peace and quiet. So I think that with these items in her safe deposit box, she actually felt that these items were safe.
But once she died, Egler says, Yudavilla Rutherford's items were no longer safe. Like the prized possessions of thousands of other Floridians, her items were shipped to an unclaimed property vault in Tallahassee. The items were auctioned off because the vault gets too full. But why does so much unclaimed stuff end up in Florida? Bob Miller oversees hospice operations for one of the largest and oldest hospice companies in the country, Miami-based Vitas. He says people move to Florida to enjoy the final years of their life. Many also end up choosing Florida as a place to die.
What drives a person to make the choice that they make is intensely personal to them. So it may be having access to that important support system. It may be being with their grandchildren or their children or their great-grandchildren. It may be being able to see the sunrise in Florida, as much as they can while they're going through this illness.
I wanted to know why Yudavilla chose Florida. I called her neighbors in Bradenton. Some said she was quiet and kept to herself, but most didn't remember her at all. The Bureau of Unclaimed Property uses a database of addresses to track down next of kin. I went onto that database. I found two names that seemed like they could be Yudavilla's children. I spent weeks making calls. I got disconnected lines, wrong numbers, and then one afternoon, this.
Hello?
Hi, I was wondering if Allison was in?
This is Allison.
Hey, Allison, my name is Kenny Malone. I'm a reporter in South Florida with the NPR member station.
Okay.
And I have a sort of strange inquiry. Is your maiden name by chance Rutherford?
Yes.
Is your mother Yudavilla Rutherford?
That's my grandmother.
Allison Martin now lives in Virginia. She seemed wary of my call at first, but she became interested when I told her I'd come across her grandmother's things.
Out of curiosity, what did she have that was interesting?
Yeah, what really kind of got me was there were a series of salt and pepper shakers. And I was like, what kind of a person puts salt and pepper shakers in a safety deposit box.
Right. Someone who's losing their mind, maybe? No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, right? And when I actually got there and I got to see the stuff, there was this little teeny oval with a picture in the middle of, I assume, her with your grandfather, and it mm-hmm. was somewhere cold. There was snow on the ground. It was, I mean, it was the most quintessential picture of sort of a wartime embrace. Any of that ring a bell?
No. She's from Maine. She moved to Florida. She, I think, summered there and then eventually moved there when she retired.
So really all you know is that she lived in Maine and moved down here
Maine,
at some point.
To, yeah, just, I don't really remember her. My parents are divorced. It's my father's mother. So that's about it. I don't really remember much about her.
Allison said that I really needed to talk with her brother in Maine, but she didn't have his number. They're not in touch. Then she told me to talk to her dad in California, but her dad wasn't in California. When I tracked him down, he was actually in Yuma, Arizona.
Hello?
Hi, is this Gary?
Yes.
I have sort of a strange question for you. I explained it all, the auction, the search, Lot 180. At the mention of every single one of his mother's mementos, Gary responded the same way.
Not a clue.
I asked him one final question. I guess just what does it mean to you to know that there was this lot of things that were really of no monetary value, but only sentimental value, and that your family didn't get a chance to look at them again?
Well, in this particular instance, my mother lived to well into her 90s, but she had Alzheimer's. And my father passed away in the 70s, and it's down to basically myself, the only child, and my children.
Allison did mention that there was a sister. You have a sister, Barbara?
Yes.
And she still is alive and down here?
Yes, but she is of a similar condition that my mother was in, so it would be little meaning to her, I believe.
That day at the auction, Lot 180 went to bidder number 605, Linda Bennett. She's a jewelry seller from South Carolina. She didn't want Udavilla Rutherford's memorabilia. She shipped the whole lot to her friend, a pen collector. Udavilla Rutherford's memories were the wrapping paper for 10 pen sets. Lot 180, worthless to the auction buyer, of little meaning to her family, had consumed 2 months of my life. It emerged just long enough for me to piece together one last fleeting image of Udavilla Rutherford. She was a widow from Maine. Her family is sprawled across the country, in Florida, in Virginia, in Arizona. She spent her final days in the warmth, her mind slowly fading, just like that old picture of a man and a woman in the snow. For Under the Sun and WLRN Miami Herald News, I'm Kenny Malone.
Kenny produced that story in 2009. He named it The Tale of Lot 180. And a tale it is. In fact, it might not have been a tale if Kenny had reported it straight. There's this auction of stuff that gets left behind. Here's the kind of stuff. Here's a buyer. Here's what they bought. The state holds on to the money in case someone finally shows up to claim the property, and the next auction will be held soon. Done. Over with. End of story. But certainly not a tale. No, Kenny turned this into a tale, into something more interesting to listen to, by showing his work, by letting us see his reporting. In this case, the sorting out of the central questions he posed.
When you're doing radio storytelling, it is the difference between night and day to have a sense of motion to your story. Where is this thing going? Is it going somewhere? Is there a goal in mind? Are people doing things? They're all different kinds of motion, but all of them help. All of them help the storytelling. All of them help just a general radio piece. The possibility for motion should inform the kinds of stories that you select. In the case of the Tale of Lot 180, things are sold. Isn't it sad? But like, maybe we could give this pile of junk one last chance to tell its story. And let's do it. Let's do it together. I'll do it in front of you on the radio. And reporters take for granted, I think, how weird a job we have, just to call people out of the blue and ask them about weird things that they may have never even thought about or never known. And so that's part of the piece, calling people out of the blue, asking them these questions, and just pulling the curtain back a little bit and showing the work for how we got to the answer that we got to. that's the motion of the piece. That's it. The reporting process becomes the central arc. And it's a trick. It's a trick that you can do once in a while, but it helps a lot. And if I think if done kind of well and done subtly enough, it can carry a story. And in this case, I think it works.
I'd like to return to a question I asked early on. How did Kenny even spot this story in the first place? Part of the answer is that it sparked a central question and Kenny could envision a way to tell the story with motion. Kenny says there's a third thing going on for the story, place. The tale of Lot 180 reveals, in part, life in Florida. Take a listen to how the story was framed in the host intro, which we didn't hear earlier.
Under the Sun on WLRN tells the stories of South Florida, on the air and online. I'm Alicia Zuckerman.
And I'm Dan Gretsch. It's winter here in South Florida, and as the temperature drops, the population rises.
About 700,000 people come to Florida each year for at least a month to escape the snow up north. They're the legendary snowbirds.
But those snowbirds are outnumbered by millions of elderly folks who call Florida their permanent home. They live in retirement communities all over the state.
Often their families live someplace else. And when they die, the family doesn't always show up to gather their belongings. Their stuff ends up in the care of the state at the Bureau of Unclaimed Property.
So one of the things that we've sort of developed in our Miami newsroom is a sense of what are our inherent stories to this place? What are our overarching themes? These are the kinds of things that people talk about as soon as they get off an airplane and they're talking to you about this city, like, oh, this is Miami. This is the place where X, Y, and Z. And for us, it's a lot of this is the place where hurricanes hit. You know, South Florida has more hurricanes than any other place in the United States. This is a place with a history of vice. This is a place with 1,000, 10,000, a million immigration stories. This is a place of transience. And so these are things that exist here without reporting. You kind of know this, and most people know this. These are our stories. So it really helps to identify those things, because what you can do then, if those are just sort of in your head churning around all the time, what you can do is you can spot anecdotes that tap into some of those central themes, and that will just by the nature of them resonate with your listenership.
What do you mean by anecdotes?
More specific stories, more illustrative examples of these bigger themes, because you can only do so many hurricane stories, you can only do so many immigration stories, but you can very subtly get at the immigration story. You can very subtly get at the fear of living in a place where at any time life might change in an instant. You can very subtly get at the fact that Florida is a really old place, and it is not only a retirement destination, but it is, at the end of the day, a death destination. And that's what the tale of Lot 180 also does. One of the reasons that the tale of Lot 180 works so well down here for our audience is that it's not just unclaimed stuff, right? It's stuff that people left behind when they died. And where else does this happen in such volume? In such volume that the state can't even keep it all. They need to liquidate it. I mean, that's a Florida problem. That's a very Floridian problem. And so knowing what your place is about, or knowing what your audience just deals with on a day-to-day basis, I think helps spot stories.
Kenny Malone reports for WLRN in Miami, Florida. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday is just around the corner. Dr. King would have been 84 years old this year. At PRX, there are, well, I did a search for Martin Luther King at the PRX website, and I got 155 hits. Hard to know where to start listening with so many options, right? But I recommend a superb 6-part series produced by the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Go ahead, search for it, Martin Luther King Jr., and check out the CBC broadcasts. And while I have your ear, remember to listen to Public Radio Remix from PRX. It's like the best of public radio on shuffle. You can listen on XM Satellite Radio 123 or online at publicradioremix.org. This is How Sound, the backstory to great radio storytelling. It's produced by the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thanks for listening.